Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening this week. I'm Jared Serbu. On the show this time, we return our focus to energy in the Defense Department, and specifically in the Air Force. Our guest for this is David Beck, the director of the Energy Directorate at the Air Force Civil Engineer Center. His organization's not in charge of making energy policy. That's the Pentagon's job. But they are charged with helping to execute that policy at Air Force installations around the world. Among the items in the portfolio, they've contracted for 220,000 megawatt hours of renewable energy, with another 65 megawatts expected in the pipeline this year. Renewables is just one category of projects the Directorate's engineers, energy experts, and contract specialists manages, though. Beck talked with me about all of them for our show today. He spoke with me by phone from his office at Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida.
We are a primary support unit under the auspices of the Air Force Civil Engineer Center. I run the Energy Directorate. And our whole purpose is to help the Air Force meet its mission by providing continuity of utilities and to provide practical ways to meet the mission with reduced demand. So find creative ways to meet the mission but consume less energy. So we have several business lines that help us accomplish that, and so I'll try and talk through those. But our goal is to provide a service to the installations that enable them to most effectively reach the their mission accomplishment. The areas that we focus on is in our measurements and analysis is one of those that we have the ability to try and analyze the consumption information that is being realized at the installations, providing that central oversight there. We'll end up producing an annual report that itemizes big picture, how we're moving against certain goals, what we're consuming, how that compares with the past, so we have a baseline to compare and to establish facts about how much we've conserved, whatnot. Then we also have a programs development business line where there's several programs they're looking at. One is in our operations and maintenance program under the category of Facility Sustainment, Restoration, and Modernization Program, FSRM. We analyze and validate energy projects that are competing for the O&M dollars under the FSRM program. We'll validate the energy saving claims and just ensure before we're going to invest in them that they are most likely going to realize the types of reductions that they claim. We also establish and set up the program for another program called our Energy Conservation Investment Program. It's a subset of a MILCON, Military Construction Program, and a lump sum amount is appropriated and authorized by Congress for DOD distribution. We compete with the other services for about, I think it's $150 million per year. And we typically, Air Force gets about $35 million. And we will set up a program, a number of projects, that number one, compete for the funding, and then that sets us up to pass the baton over to another sister organization with AFCEC to execute them. But about a $35 million a year program that we set up. That's our direct funded line, so using government dollars. But we also, in the same area, we have a program where we're leveraging private industry dollars or third-party investments. And we have two programs. They're somewhat synonymous. One is called the Energy Savings Performance Contract, ESPC, and its sister is the Utility Energy Service Contract. Those two tools are based upon some authorizations that we have that allow us to invest using third-party financing in energy savings types of opportunities. Contractor comes in, they will actually do the renovations, modernizations, replacements, and then they're paid based upon the savings that they actually realize. And so we've got a big program there, and we provide the central planning and execution of that whole program from our Tyndall-based location. Another aspect of the type of product that we provide is in renewable energy. We have a large initiative where we're trying to bring renewable energy or green power into our consumption, and we will, from a central standpoint, manage individual projects, again, leveraging third-party financed dollars. We leverage that to either build on or near our installations these renewable energy systems that will then produce power that we can utilize. In the same general area, we have some expertise where we look at installations, utility contracts, analyze them, and provide recommendations on how they can enter negotiation to modify their contract to save money, or recommendations on how they can modify their demand to reduce peak loads and, as a result, pay less for the utilities. We've got a program management office that's focusing on advanced metering systems for our utilities. By and large, most of our bases do not have an automated means to collect at building by building the utility usage, and thereby they don't lack a real-time basis where they can start to manage their consumption. So we have an initiative to where we are going to be installing meter systems at many of our installations over the next 5 years, such that they can look real-time, make conscious decisions about how to manage their loads, and more effectively meet their mission through that process. Another area that's dealing with third-party financing is our utility privatization area, where we have a team of folks that look at different utility systems that are installations, and along with the base staff as well as the major command staff, we'll analyze and compare through a bid process the cost of what it takes to own and operate a utility system, either through private industry or government, and we make a decision as to who's going to provide the best value. And so I'll talk a little bit later on about how what some of our results were. But we use utility privatization for a number of benefits. Number one, when we privatize, we're guaranteeing that this new system owner is going to make investments in the utility system to bring it up to industry standard. And so we're going to improve the reliability and the energy security that utility system provides. So we see that as a great tool for us to not only privatize a system that is not in the best interest of the government to retain, but then we gain some energy security as a result of that. We have another capability that's embedded with us from the Air Force Legal Operations Center. And let me start again. We have another capability that's embedded with us that's provided by the Air Force Legal Operations Agency. It's known as the Utility Field Legal Service Center. And it helps us engage with the states and the utilities to ensure that the U.S. government is paying a fair rate for the utilities. And so we work with the team of lawyers that's embedded with us in analyzing the different rate cases that are announced by the Public Utilities Commissions. And then we will engage where appropriate to ensure that, again, the government doesn't pay anything more than it should. In this case, we represent not just the Air Force, but we're assigned different regions to where we represent all the federal agencies that are being serviced by that utility. So that's a quick rundown of some of the capabilities that we provide within the Energy Directorate for the entire Air Force.
And so one of the things that you kind of delineated was the difference between your funded lines of business and the ones that tend to leverage third-party financing. And you mentioned the competition for FSRM dollars, for example, which is, as I recall, one of the areas that got hit particularly hard in at least the first year of sequestration. I guess my question is, due to budget cuts in funded lines of business and areas like that, is the balance shifting more to third-party financing? In other words, are you having to find more creative ways to get the mission done that don't necessarily involve appropriated dollars?
Yes, it is true that the Air Force is going to be shifting more emphasis on using third-party investments to help us accomplish some of our energy production and our energy reduction goals. I'll give you some examples. Over the past 5-6 years, in the FSRM arena, we were very fortunate to be able to invest about $650 million in direct funded projects. And some of the benefits that we were able to leverage from that was a computed savings of over 6,400 billion BTUs of energy that's going to be saved in the process. And we were able to avoid about $1.5 billion worth of utility costs in the process. Our projects were strong. They were very competitive. We actually had a set-aside source of money for those O&M FSRM projects. However, due to the budget cuts, we had to take a new look at that. By and large, our energy projects now compete head-to-head with regular mission projects. And that's a tough comparison to come out ahead on. Let me say it a little different way. When we compare ourselves with mission projects, oftentimes you're going to invest in those mission projects. So it has really pushed us in the direction of looking towards the third-party finance lines of business to where we can accomplish the same goal, but bring in our industry partners and the financing they're able to secure for some of our big projects. To give you an idea, over the past 2 years, in the Energy Savings Performance Contract, we had started up the program from scratch. We'd been on a hiatus, a strategic pause, if you will, and we've started that back up, and we're now building ourselves towards the goal of trying to award a little more than $200 million worth of ESPC third-party finance projects this year. So that's just one example. In the renewable area, in the renewable energy area, we've always been very reliant upon third-party financing. Whether it's photovoltaic or wind or other kinds of renewable energies, we generally didn't want to own that ourselves, and so we've always been reliant upon industry to be able to provide that. So we'll continue in that manner. Utility privatization, of course, because we have fewer dollars to invest into our utility systems, I think it heightens the awareness of the benefit of the utility privatization effort, that may be the very effective way of bringing utility systems up to industry standards because we lack the direct funding to accomplish it ourselves.
That's David Beck, the director of the Energy Directorate at the Air Force Civil Engineer Center. We'll come back and talk more about the energy services his organization provides to Air Force commanders after a short break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com in 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbia. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. We are talking Air Force energy on the program this week with the organization that's primarily responsible for the on-the-ground execution of the Air Force's energy policy. David Beck is the director of the Air Force Civil Engineer Center's Energy Directorate. Let's pick up our conversation on the services the center provides for the Air Force. Maybe you can talk a little bit about your relationship to individual Air Force major commands and bases. I mean, is it a matter of you simply responding to an individual base's request for support? I mean, does a commander come to you and say, I want to build this size solar array at my base? Or are you centrally managing all of these projects as a portfolio and deciding from your office, this project makes sense at this given base?
We do a little bit of both. I call it a little bit of a push and a pull. We provide the central oversight in terms of executing the assistant secretary's goals in the energy area. We're the execution agent. And so we will educate the installations. We do that right now working through the major commands who then pass along information to the installations. But then as we accomplish certain types of studies and analyses, we'll then also reach out and indicate, hey, this might be a good opportunity for you at base X, Y, and Z. But then we also leave the lines of communication open for the base to say, hey, you know, we've been listening to, you know, the information been passed along, and we agree. We think we've got a great opportunity. We'd like your help. And so we find that, you know, in both the push and the pull mechanism of us reaching out and saying, here's a really good opportunity, and then allow the base an opportunity to warm up to it and do some research and then come back and say, you know, we agree. This can be the a great approach for us. Can you help us move forward? At that point, then we will come alongside of them. They'll always be, at the base level, they'll be their eyes and ears. Because we're centralized here, we don't have a forward presence at each location. So we're gonna rely upon the base's ability to be a liaison for us. But then we'll interface with the base, with the major command, and depending upon who our contracting agency might be, we have an embedded procurement capability with us for the Air Force, or we may even reach out to some of the other agencies like GSA. DLA, or the Corps of Engineers, for example, will then execute through those contracting means to bring about the desired contract and the desired end result.
And in that push function that you mentioned, when you're out there communicating with individual base commanders, I've got to imagine that at least part of your function is to evangelize for emerging new technologies that people sitting on a base don't necessarily have the awareness of or the ability to go out and study. How much of that goes on, and can you think of any examples where you've pushed out new things to the field?
Yeah, that's really true. In general terms, the installation staff have gotten very lean, and generally speaking, they're not going to have all of the expertise on board with them. And so they'll reach back to organizations like the Civil Engineers Center for certain types of expertise. And you know, a good example would be in the use of LED lights for interior use. That's not a revolutionary product at this point. I mean, you can obviously buy those, you go to Home Depot, but from a widespread standpoint, initially there was a degree of caution that if you were to just go ahead and start installing these in your existing lighting plan, you're also going to have to issue sunglasses, as an example, and just be so bright that it could really be a blinding effect. And so we've provided, along with some of my sister organization team members here, we provide some expertise on trying to evolve the industry standards, working with industry, and then providing the right kind of guidance so that when a base wants to move forward with a certain technology, like LED lighting for interior, that we put in the right kinds of guidelines so that they get a product that's going to last and it's going to not underwhelm or overwhelm, but provide the right kind of illumination for their needs. So that would be an example. Another example might be in how we can mix and match different technologies to meet their energy supply continuity needs. If, for instance, a base has a certain mission that cannot fail and must have a high degree of reliable power, then you know, we'll advise them on some of the different technologies that might be available from a production, from a storage, or even from a switching standpoint so that they can, again, get the desired end result. But it all starts with having the reach-back capability here with a team of engineers that have a variety of different specializations all found at the Air Force Civil Engineer Center.
You mentioned a little bit about interagency partnerships, and this is very complicated stuff that you do, but it's also similar challenges that are faced by other military services and other agencies. I know the Army has its Energy Initiatives Task Force, or it's actually called something different now that it's permanent. But as you go through and develop your own lessons learned and how to work through these complicated business deals, how much cross-pollination is there between organizations like that as you all try to figure out the best way to do business in these areas?
There's a fair amount of reliance upon other agencies, and so there is an equally fair amount of cross-pollinization, cross-communications. I talk quite often with my counterpart at the Army Corps of Engineers in Huntsville, which is where their Center of Expertise for Energy is. And we're constantly sharing information, helping each other advocate. I'm generally in the situation of having a very small staff here, and so I'm looking for other entities to help support me, provide a force multiplier, if you will. And so the Corps of Engineers, GSA, DLA are some of those organizations. The DOE with their FEMP program all provide me a lot of reach-back capability in terms of advisory, but also in terms of engineering and contracting types of support. We're just now starting to reach an agreement with the Army Corps of Engineers, as an example, to help us execute the Energy Savings Performance Contract program in part, where they'll start with two pilot projects in the near future. We'll have them develop these two projects at two locations that will help us increase our throughput. So we found that oftentimes my small government staff, supplemented by have some embedded contract labor support, oftentimes can be a limiting factor. So I'll reach out to other agencies who have the expertise and can very efficiently support us to get us again to that end result of a contract online that's either going to help us save or help us produce energy.
David Beck is the director of the Air Force Civil Engineer Center's Energy Directorate. Another short break here, and we'll come back and talk about some of the specific projects his office is working on right now on Air Force bases around the country. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servin.
Calling 911 from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS HealthBeat. In an emergency, call 911. But a researcher at the University of Colorado School of Medicine says some people don't. Camilla Sasson reviewed data on focus groups and interviews with people in primarily lower-income Latino neighborhoods in Denver. She says many Hispanics were reluctant to call 911 when someone had cardiac arrest because they didn't understand how the system worked. She reported fear that police would show up and demand identification, and this carried over to paramedics.
There's a real misperception out there that if you don't have ID, if you're not willing to pay up front, which is what they have to do in Mexico, paramedics will not transport you to the hospital.
The study in Annals of Internal Medicine was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
Management Friday on Federal News Radio. Friday mornings at 10, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum host Women of Washington. Hear from Washington, D.C.'s ambitious and influential female executives, role models for the next generation Washington leader. Then at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch to learn the best career path for you. Management Friday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. We're talking this week about Air Force energy. Our guest is David Beck, the director of the Air Force Civil Engineer Center's Energy Directorate, the organization in charge of executing the service's energy policies across its network of Air Force bases. So let's switch to some of the specific ongoing initiatives that you're working right now, some of which you mentioned earlier. Maybe we can start with the the utility privatization effort that's ongoing across the country on Air Force bases. I would assume the basic philosophy behind that is similar to what DOD took when it decided to privatize base housing, which is basically, this is not our core competency. Let's turn it over to someone whose it is.
There is some element of that, but actually the initial thrust had to do with an unfortunate accident of a train wreck near an Army installation, that there was a fire that ensued that ended up creating an explosion on base, and unfortunately some people perished in that whole incident. Congress, as a result of that, encouraged DOD to move forward with utility privatization. But the secondary effect is, you know, as you've stated, is, you know, very effective helping to provide a utility system that's going to be reliable and that may no longer be needed in terms of core competencies within a given agency or service. And so we recognize that we have a very important contingency capability or a need that we need to maintain, but we may not need to maintain that capability of, say, providing utility service in a forward operating location. We may not need to maintain that capability every single base. So that becomes part of it. We will look at the different utility systems from a business cost analysis standpoint. And when we boil it all down with the different factors we look at, we're really looking at from that business deal of, does this make sense for the Air Force? Is it going to save us money? That's a big key for us. And then we also look at some of the intangibles of how might this improve the reliability and the general benefit to our mission accomplishment. We're very fortunate. We've looked at a couple hundred of our utility systems. We've analyzed and we've actually privatized 66 of those installations. We've privatized 66 of those utility systems. And just this last year in 2014, we were able to privatize three systems. It turned out they were an electrical, water, and sewer system at one location. Total value of the contract was just over $400 million, a 50-year deal, if you will. And we calculated that we would save $33 million over a 50-year period. And so that's great news, you know, from a taxpayer standpoint. I think it's great news from the mission standpoint, because the system owner will come in, they'll maintain the system, they'll bring it to industry standard. So I think it's a win-win all the way around. We're going to be looking in the next 2 years at analyzing 12 more systems, and with each of those analyses, we'll make a decision whether to retain it or to privatize it. If it's a decision to privatize it, you know, we'll calculate the savings or the cost avoidance that is resulting from that. So we're looking forward to in the next 2 years what these analyses will bring us to bear.
And also sort of in the arena of modernizing bases' electric infrastructure, I know another one of the things you're working on is actually going out and metering individual buildings on base as opposed to just having a single meter at the gate. Talk about where you are in that effort and what it gets you once you have this more discrete metering.
Yes, we call this our Advanced Meter Reading System, AMRS for short. And we're real excited about this program. Generally, our bases, they may have smart meters, they may not, at many of their facilities, but generally speaking, they don't have a way of reporting that back to a central repository. And so we've developed an initiative and set up a program management office that will be installing these advanced meter reading systems, as well as additional meters to supplement what's already on base that will all report to the system. All with the intent of being able to collect at least 60% of the Air Force's facility energy consumption. So we're presently targeting over the next 5 years to install the system at 30 bases. We calculate that should get us to 60% of the total consumption, and at which point then we would do a business case analysis. to determine whether there's a financial benefit as well as a programmatic benefit to continuing the installation at other installations. So we're starting with our high-consuming installations first, and then we work our way down to lower-consuming bases. We've just started the program. We did a pilot a couple years ago where we installed the AMRS system at two of our installations. Been monitoring how well it operates, how well it reports, the extent to which the staffs on those two locations are able to utilize and benefit from the system. And then we're going to put out a new contract later this year that would install systems at five more installations. And then with each year, we'll successfully increase the number of bases that we install the system. In the end, we think this is going to be a great tool for energy conservation. It will put, in real-time basis, information in the hands of the installation engineer staff so they can look and make conscious, deliberate decisions about their consumption patterns and look for real positive ways to spread their load out over the course of the day, manage their peaks because their utility billing is largely set upon what their peak consumption is. So we think this is a great way to help the base conserve energy. I think it'll provide some historical, and looking back a couple years from now, it'll provide some historical information that better help us understand where to target future energy conservation projects based upon the consumption data that we'll be able to retrieve from this.
And at the bases where the system has been installed, are there concrete savings or better management practices that you can point to and say, yeah, this is a win?
At this point, we haven't gleaned all the lessons learned, nor have we gleaned all of the actual benefits. So it's a pretty new program. In their case, they've been operating a little less than a year, and so we're still going to need some more time to pull the data together over the course of more than a year and start to look at and discuss with the base staff how they've used it, where they have found the aha moments, what system tweaks that might need to be made to make it a little more user-friendly, and so on. So the real benefit is yet to come, but we're anxious and excited about what the data is going to reveal to us.
David Beck is the director of the Air Force Civil Engineer Center's Energy Directorate. We'll take one more break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Air Force's energy goals and priorities for 2015 and some energy accomplishments from past years. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin.
Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, learn how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 9, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help breathe life into federal IT policy. And at 11, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO to hear from your agency's top tech leader how technology is changing government. Tech Tuesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. One more segment this week as we wrap up our conversation with David Beck, the director of the Energy Directorate at the Air Force Civil Engineer Center. Before the break, we talked about a couple of specific energy projects going on Air Force bases right now, including advanced electric metering and electric utility privatization. We're down to about our last 5 minutes here, so let me slightly throw it open to you and just ask a broader question about what's on the horizon for 2015. What are your most important priorities? What are you going to be working on?
Be glad to share that. I'm going to pepper in a little bit of our accomplishments as well because that will set the stage.
You bet.
In the renewable energy area, again, that's a really big portion piece for us that we'd like to focus on. It's going to provide us some energy security and continuity. That becomes very important from our mission accomplishment standpoint. But very fortunate, although we have a very small team, we are presently producing 102 megawatts of renewable energy power. That equates to about 6% of our total consumption as renewables. And this is directly what the Air Force either owns or has invested in. This does not count what the utility company on their own has invested in. We produce over 220,000 megawatt hours of this renewable energy. I think it's great from a lot of standpoints. You've heard me talk about the energy security that's going to help us bring. It's also good for the U.S. in many different aspects. We are looking towards, in the future, completing another 65 megawatts of projects. I should say we are looking towards this next year of signing agreements, leases, for another 65 megawatts of power that once they're built out, would increase our overall yield, by another 60%. So exciting in terms of some of the new frontier there in renewable energy. We're hoping to even expand into a waste-to-energy type of production where we'll be taking garbage trash from the installation and perhaps even from the nearby community and generate power from that. That'll be that's a new frontier for us, and we're excited about that. In addition to PV and wind, it'll be a new component. We've got some future, probably out beyond the current year, opportunities for biomass. And so each of these new components, once we can birth it, I think will then spawn other installations, interest to do more of the same. So renewable energy, great, exciting areas, and so we're really looking forward to how that's going to rapidly increase in terms of the consumption that we use. In regards to our energy savings performance contracts, we made a commitment that we're trying to award $416 million worth of third-party finance energy savings contracts over the next 2 years. So this calendar year, take us to the end of December, we're targeting a little more than $200 million of that to be awarded. And so we're working very feverishly on that, breaking some new grounds for us in this area. And we believe this will be revolutionary for us in terms of the amount of energy that we're able to save through the investment of third-party financing. We'll continue to invest in our direct funding with the another $35 to $40 million in our Energy Conservation Investment Program. And this year, we're looking towards a very lean guarantee of about $25 million in our FSRM energy component. But we're also trying to posture ourselves such that if there's end-of-year monies, that number can grow significantly. Talked about the AMRS, where we're looking forward to investing in the next five installations, and excited about that. Utility privatization, I think I mentioned there that we're going to be analyzing 12 more systems, and so we're excited about what that may bring. All the total of this, one of the metrics that we look at is energy intensity. It's the amount of energy we use per square foot. And what we've been able to do since the baseline of 2003 is we've been able to reduce our energy consumption per square foot by over 24%. Our goal is to get to 30%, and we've made great progress in that regard. And so we're excited about how these various initiatives all work together in a synergistic manner that will help us to further improve on our intensity reduction. And so I think they all work together. I've got a team that's cohesive, trying to bring about the actual fruit of our execution labor, such that the Air Force accomplishes its mission without fail and without interruption of utilities, but uses the least amount of utilities to accomplish that.
One quick follow-up in our last minute or so. You mentioned 65 megawatts of projects set to go on contract this year. Is that made up of one or two really big projects, or is it scattered all over the place?
It is scattered. However, one of the larger ones for us is a California base, Vandenberg, where we had already put out the contract, and we're evaluating proposals for a system that could be around 19 megawatts, 20 megawatts. So let me repeat that. Vandenberg, we've put out solicitation and going through the evaluations that could bring 20 megawatts of renewable energy power for that installation.
That's David Beck, the director of the Energy Directorate at the Air Force Civil Engineer Center. As you've been hearing, that's the organization in charge of implementing the Air Force's installation energy policies across all of its bases. We thank him for joining us for the full hour this week. And if you missed any of our conversation, we'll post the full program, as always, at federalnewsradio.com/ondod. That's going to do it for this week's program. Thanks, as always, for listening. I'm Jared Serbu. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Hookahs and snus to cigarettes. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. A study indicates teens and young adults who start smoking with hookahs or water pipes are more likely later to start smoking cigarettes and keep using them. Researcher Samir Saneji of Dartmouth College saw this in 2 years of data on hookah users who were 15 to 23 years old at the start. He says users of snus, which is a smokeless tobacco product, also were more likely to later use cigarettes.
Both hookah and snus may very well serve as gateways to cigarettes. Hookah introduces youth to the practice of inhaling smoke. Both hookah and snus expose youth to nicotine.
And he says hookahs and snus can lead to tobacco-related disease and death. The study in the journal JAMA Pediatrics was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.